Welcome to Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. I'm your host, Kathy Nelson, an electrical engineer who loves to hear and share stories of other women in STEM. On today's podcast, I sit down with Maria Jesus Luxinger, a chemical engineer. Maria has bachelor's and master's degrees in chemical engineering. Maria was responsible for computer simulations, but also worked on implementing data analytics code to optimize production in chemical plants. Currently, she's focusing on sharpening her skills in data science and wants to understand the relationship with process automation and control. Please enjoy her story.
I say morning, but I guess it's your afternoon.
Yes, over here is 5 p.m.
So you're in the Netherlands. How have things been for like lockdown and quarantine? And like, where are you guys at right now?
Well, we are still under corona, let's say, measures. So we still have that. And yeah, most shops are closed. Also, we have restrictions from going at night from a certain hour. I think it's 8 or 8:30. I don't remember that set hour because I'm never late there at night. But there is that restriction. But supermarkets and, you know, essential shops are open. And yeah, people wearing masks when they go to the supermarkets and so on. So yeah, you can go out, but most things are closed.
Okay. Are you quarantining with anyone or are you by yourself? What's your living situation right now?
Right now I'm in my brother's place in Rotterdam. So yeah, right now I'm just with my brother, but my brother is studying, and actually he studies kind of like in a hospital, I would say, because he's doing like a master's in biomedical research, like medical research. So he has to go to the hospital quite a bit, and he has to get all the time tested for COVID.
So do you and your brother get along? Are you guys like pretty close siblings?
Yeah, so right now it's more like for some personal circumstances that I'm living here with him. But I used to live alone, and at some point then I will move again, probably alone.
Is it better than living alone? Because I think like right now, like quarantining, I think would be really hard to do if you're completely alone. Like that seems like it would be a pretty difficult situation.
It has their advantages because at least I can talk with him. But even though he's busy most of the time, we are all busy in our things. But yeah, at least I have somebody to talk to more on a daily basis if I compare it to my previous situation.
You have a master's in chemical engineering. Is that correct? Yep. And so what do you do currently? Because I know things change.
Yeah. So I'm a chemical engineer. So I did my bachelor in chemical engineering and my master's in chemical. And then from my first job, I went into simulations. So this is basically doing simulation models of chemical processes. And that is useful for studying what-if cases of the plant, or also for mass balances, energy balances, and so on. But there I also learned about a new area that is called advanced analytics, and that is basically using data from chemical plants to also build models. But these models are different because these models are based on data, whether the models I used to make were based on equations. So traditional process simulations in chemical industry are really just physical equations, you know, mass and energy balances. So I started learning about these data models, these algorithms that some people call machine learning and AI, but I don't personally like calling them that way. I think there is a lot of hype behind the name of AI and machine learning. And when I started learning about these models, for me, it was just models, mathematical, you know, constructions with the data from the plant that actually serve a purpose, in this case, doing optimization. And for me, that is what was important, you know, that I was building something, okay, with some data, mathematics, statistics to optimize production. Then later, as I dive deep into the theory, I realize, okay, this is actually machine learning and AI, but it's really, yeah. So what I'm doing right now, and I'm diving deeper into that area, And advanced analytics is a sub area of what some people call digitalization or even digital transformation, some people. So my focus is really into digitalization, I would say, of the chemical industry. And more specifically in the part of data analytics. So using what some people call machine learning, or in theory is called machine learning, to optimize a process. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a chemical process. It can also be any other process in manufacturing. But I am, as a chemical engineer, I'm particularly even more interested on chemical processes. So it's something I'm getting trained still to do. I'm not an expert, but I really like it, because it combines a deep knowledge of the process with computing and mathematics that is very technical.
What would a typical day in your work life be? Like, what would you normally do on a like day-to-day basis?
Right now, I'm following a lot of trainings. These models, in theory, you could just have a data scientist and they could code the model in Python or R or any kind of programming language. But since I'm not a data scientist, at least I'm not at that level of programming yet, then I'm doing some courses on some software that can do the same, but require less programming. So I'm really just, for now, I'm taking some cases, but also really learning the software and some theory behind it. Because as I told you, my background was doing the traditional process simulations, and not so much in depth into these data models, but right now I'm getting more in depth into these data models. And for now, I'm doing a lot of training for now.
Well, and how long has it been since you got your master's degree? Like, how long have you been in the workforce?
Yeah, so my master's was in 2019. Yeah, so not that long. So really, maybe 1 year, almost 2 years. So yeah, not that long.
Yeah, so training makes a lot of sense, because there's a lot of things to learn. And I don't know if you found this, but one of the things that I found is, like, you graduate and you expect that, like, you think in the back of your head that you're supposed to know all these things, right? Because you have this new degree and you learn these things in college, and then you get to the workforce and you're like, it doesn't necessarily translate. And then there's like a whole lot of like practical things that you have to learn. Did you find that?
In my case, I must say that while I was studying, I really thought, really, really thought that none of these equations, you know, all this theory, mathematics that they are taught in engineering, I was ever going to use. I really thought that. But I think because my first job was really doing simulations, I was actually really surprised that within this area, and it's a very specific area, you use like all the equations, everything. So for me, like going into work was really like using everything I have learned, and even learning new things. And even I felt like, honestly, in terms of technical complexity, a lot of simulations I had to do actually taught me a lot of new, some new concepts, and refreshed some of my school years. But I really like it a lot, because I really wanted a job where I can go into the technical details of the chemical process. I really wanted that. I really wanted to use my number, my equations, my mathematics, everything. So for me, it was really nice. So for me, it was quite the opposite. I use a lot of things from university. Right now in the area of data analytics is completely different, because this area is very new and most universities are not even researching it. However, they are starting to do it. So I just figured out that actually my university just got a new professor that is on this area of machine learning and AI in chemical engineering, because, you know, this is something that, how can I explain it? Like, in engineering, you have your equations, your mass and energy balance, your physics that describe the process. And then this new technology of machine learning AI comes that, okay, it's scientific, but it's kind of trying to replace your equations, because this technology, what it's saying is, you know, all this time that you're spending trying to describe your processes with all this physics, you could actually just do it with data and statistics. So that is like a punch in the face for some professors and for some people that are really into physics and know, and you have to understand the process, and it's not about data, it's really about the principles. So it's really kind of a punch in the face for some people. But now in the universities, you are starting to see that actually now there are more professors open to this area. And I think personally, we have to reach a point of combining both. So, and that is very, very particular in the chemical industry, is that because you have all these simulations that are traditionally done based on equations, and you have this new technology, which is machine learning, which is not new, it's just new in the, let's say, using it for chemicals. If you combine both, you can get good results, because, you know, it's not the same. This machine learning AI, many companies in different sectors, they have using it. For example, your phone, when you take a picture and it recognizes your face, that is face recognition, or all your accounts that you have on your cell phone, recommending you things to buy or things to listen to or new podcast. That is all a machine learning algorithm. But in that case, there is no really physics behind it. So there is nothing being displaced. But here in chemical industry, you are kind of saying, okay, let's throw away the equations and now we're going to do everything with data. But I say, no, we should find a balance. And I think some people are trying to combine these two approaches to reach the goal. So that is good.
So is it kind of like you have a theoretical side, which is how things have been done with equations and trying to model things. And then you have the practical side, which is where the data and the AI is coming in. So it's kind of really taking like theoretical and practical. And what you're saying is really trying to combine them and really to make kind of the best of both worlds, or, you know, like really optimize it by using both methodologies.
Yeah, I would say you describe it very well. So it's really to take the best out of both worlds. I wouldn't call the machine learning part practical. It's also not practical. It's just a new technology. So what you really have to combine is, what do you want to achieve and why? Like, you shouldn't use machine learning or AI, or you shouldn't even use a simulation just because you can. You should use it because, you know, because it's gonna bring you value. Some problems in a chemical plant, they don't need any simulation or machine learning or AI. So it's more like up to you to think critically and apply technology, not for the sake of it, but more when it's gonna help. And what you really, I think you have to compare, if I look, what would be really the practical side that you have to take into account is all this, the context of the operations of a chemical plant, that there are no really equations, well, maybe some, but it's more about how is the operations, if it's the shifts that you have, where do people keep their records? It's not only the numeric data that you get from the sensors, but also maintenance records, or just how operations are run in theory, because manufacturing, it can be very messy, like a lot of things can go wrong, and there are problems all the time that need to be fixed quickly. And also, that is one challenge of this technology in chemical industry, is that you, at least for the machine learning one, you need a lot of data. That's the downside, I would say, because you need a lot of data, and most chemical manufacturing companies don't have high quality or good data available. So it's really challenging to be able to work with very messy data, or even try to build something useful with very little data. So there are many challenges on applying this technology to a manufacturing environment that have to be overcome. And I could go on and on, but yeah, there are, I would say it's not easy, but you should really apply it just because it makes sense, not because you can.
So it's really kind of like keeping the end in mind, like what's your end goal?
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. When we talked earlier, you mentioned that you're from Venezuela. So what brought you from Venezuela to the Netherlands?
I speak for myself, but yeah, Venezuela is, I mean, it's an amazing country and amazing people. Unfortunately, there is like the economic situation is not really very ideal, unfortunately. So some people, have decided to leave the country, and this is what I did. I am one of the few Venezuelans that were very lucky to actually be able to go and study abroad and build a life abroad. But I know also other people that don't have that possibility. So in that sense, I feel very lucky. So yeah, if you read the news, Venezuela, yeah, it's not, it's a bit hard to say, but there are some underlying problems, let's put it this way, in the country itself that for young people can be challenging.
Okay, so you and your brother left. What about your parents? Are they still in Venezuela? Did they also come to the Netherlands?
So they, first my brother came, and then I came. My parents were still there, but just until recently, they also moved. My mother is in Spain. My father until now was working in Nigeria, but now even that is not going to continue anymore. So we are seeing what to do. But yeah, they also left at some point, but I think they left. I think in their case, it was more like the situation really pushed them to move from Venezuela.
Okay. So did you do your master's in Netherlands? Is that what you went to the Netherlands to do?
Yes, I did my master's and then basically I just stayed here.
Okay. How has that experience been in the Netherlands? So I have a couple of questions around that. So I'm an electrical engineer and I went to a conference. I work in the utility industry. So I went to a utility telecommunications conference because I'm also in telecommunications for utilities. And there was one female engineer from Europe at the conference. So it was one female engineer from Europe and then me at the conference and the rest was men. So I'm kind of curious, what your experience has been as a chemical engineer, as a female in Europe, if you see such a low number of women or if it's different in chemical engineering, or what's your experience been?
Traditionally, at least in the university, of course, yeah, there are more men, but if you look at the general population, but in chemical engineering, I'm not sure, but I think it was almost 50-50, actually. Maybe something like 30 versus, 70 or something like that.
But more than one.
So in chemical engineering, actually, there are quite some women. And later in work, in chemical manufacturing, women, I would say, are minority, but it's not, maybe in proportion it's actually bad, but I have never felt affected by it. And right now in my current situation, I do know that there are this very, very little women, because right now I'm in this field that is really IT with manufacturing, and manufacturing IT, I have realized that is even less women, because in manufacturing, you can have, but then if you go to manufacturing IT specifically, so all the people that work with automation, process control, analytics, all this data, then it's even less. I honestly don't feel any bias or anything like that. And I'm lucky, I would say, but I suppose there are other people that maybe have had bad experiences. And very much of the mentality that gender and color and appearance, these are things that we don't choose. Like when I was born, I didn't choose to be a woman. Like nobody asked me, do you want to be a woman? Do you want to be a man? Do you want to have a skin color? You know, what do you want your appearance to be? Like nobody asked me that. So it's something I didn't have a choice. Just as I think I shouldn't have a disadvantage for being a woman, I also don't like the other side of having an advantage or being in advantage because of being a woman. It should also just be about your knowledge and your work ethic, I would say.
Oh, I 1,000% agree. It would be nice if that's how it worked and that you were just judged based on your abilities and your knowledge and your skill sets. What about Venezuela? What was that like? So you went to university for your undergrad in Venezuela, right? Mm-hmm. So what was that experience like?
Well, regarding this woman topic, I mean, actually, there were quite a lot of women in chemical engineering in my country, quite a lot, and also in the university. But, there is this stereotype, I think it's really just a stereotype, that in Latin America in general, there's more a bit more of bias regarding gender than in Europe. But even then, I don't feel, at least even maybe some people were judging me, but I was never aware. I think I never either pay attention to it, or I was just lucky enough that I never experienced anything bad. Really, no, nothing.
So I don't know anything about Venezuelan like culture and like society pressures. Is it typical for women to stay home? Is it typical for women to work? Kind of like, what is that like from a society standpoint?
Well, I think my environment was quite fair, and in my personal situation, of course, my parents wanted me to be independent and, you know, don't have it relied on anybody else, basically, for maintaining myself. So that is good. And over time, of course, this perception of the role of woman has changed over time. What I can say about Venezuela is that there is a lot of pressure regarding for women the physical image. There is a lot of pressure on that because, yeah, apparently we are the country with who has won the most beauty contest. I have never paid attention to that, really. I mean, I take care of myself and so on, but I have never felt pressure like, oh, you always have to be perfect. No, but there is like a general culture in Venezuela where women, you know, really like to take care of themselves more in average than in other countries. And I don't think it's necessarily bad. It's only bad once it really, you start feeling pressure about it. But I don't know. During university, I was so much focused on, I guess I was always being focused on the technical side of things and on engineering and on other things that I never really pay attention to any of this.
Okay, so what about your parents? Like, what did your parents do? And did your mom work outside the home?
Yes, of course. Both of them, they are both oil and gas engineers, and they both work. Yeah, once we were born, and my mother did quit her job, but that was entirely her choice. There was no pressure over it or anything. So they are both engineers.
So did the fact that they're engineers, did that influence you instead of what you did? Was that like your primary influence or kind of what led you into engineering?
No, not at all. Actually, I always tell, when I was still in high school, I always told them that I didn't want to become an engineer. I didn't even know why I was saying that. I think I didn't have an idea of what engineering meant. But they didn't.
Common
they
problem.
Didn't, yeah, but they didn't really, they never pressured me into something. They were just fine with whatever I wanted to study, really. I never got any pressure from anybody. I just chose for chemical engineering because I started liking chemistry. But on the other hand, I started liking math. And I remember at some point it considering a bit of systems engineering. But now that I look into my life and what I'm heading in this direction of digitalization and of chemical industry, what I'm really focused, I think it all comes back in a circle because I have the chemistry part, I have the mathematics, and this little interest I had for systems engineering and computers is popping up now, just now, with all this machine learning and data science applied to this industry. So it's really, my goal is really to apply this technology. There are many technologies in digitalization, but apply them in a really practical way, without buzzwords, without all these terms, just really getting results out of it and contextualizing these technologies to the chemical industry specifically, because that's the challenge with this, is that you need to understand how the chemical processes work and what are the fundamentals before you try applying a new technology. And I can put an example with data analytics. Like, yeah, you can analyze a bunch of data, you can get some insights from data, you can build an amazing neural network with your data, but then if you don't know how to interpret the results, because you don't understand what the data corresponds to, mm-hmm. then you are not gonna make it work. And I think we have to be very real that we really need to contextualize the data, because otherwise it doesn't matter how much AI or machine learning you apply, it's not gonna make wonders to your plant if you are not really grounded in the context of how people work and how things are done before this technology can really have success.
Yeah, you don't want data just for having data, because it's useless. And then you just have like terabytes of useless data if you don't apply it to or add, I don't want to say accurately, but apply it in a way that it's useful. What about when you were growing up? So what was your like young life like? What were you interested in as a kid? You talk about being interested in chemistry and math. Was that something you were always interested in? Were there other things?
It's actually funny, because when I was I first wanted to become a journalist. I used to have fictitious newspapers that I will distribute among the house. And I always said, yeah, I want to be a journalist. But then... yeah, in high school, my very first course on chemistry, I liked it so much that then I was heading into the direction. And in my high school years, I really went deep into chemistry, not chemical engineering, because I didn't know what that was. At that moment, I was really obsessed about the idea of CO2 carbon capture. And I remember even I was contacting people from UK that were researching this just because I wanted to replicate their experiments. I remember doing that. As I go more into university, into actual engineering, I just really focus on chemical processes, and now just adding the computer element to it.
So you mentioned like not knowing what a chemical engineer did. So I think this is a common problem, because it's so hard to know what it is. I had no idea what an electrical engineer was, even when I was going to school to be an electrical engineer. I will say that like my kids, and I've got a 22-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 15-year-old, their whole time at school, they, because of a state law that the state that I live in has, they have been introduced to components of engineering throughout their schooling, which is great. But I find this to be like such a common, I don't want to say problem, a common thing for, and this is obviously like not gender specific. So it's just I think it's commonplace to not know what engineers do. And so how do you know that you want to be an engineer if without knowing what they do? And I think that that's really interesting. You know, how do we change that? And I'm also going to guess that with chemical engineering, like electrical engineering, there's probably 30,000 jobs that electrical engineers do. So just because you're an electrical engineer, it really doesn't say much about what you actually do, which is why one of the questions that I ask is, what do you do in a typical day? Because everybody does something different. And like, I have good friends that are also utility electrical engineers, and they do something completely different than what I do. How do you encourage girls to go into engineering when you can't really... when they don't know what it is? Like, I think that's an interesting part, an interesting challenge.
I agree. I think everybody, maybe they have their own definition of engineering, really. So my personal definition, and maybe it's one that many people share, is that you have science, which science is basically just trying to figure out how things work. So really physics is just trying to figure out how the universe or whatever nature works. And what the engineers do is like, okay, this is great. We know how things work, but can we use science, the principles of science, to create new things and to apply it, to actually look more into applications of science. So I would say engineering is really the application of science either for existing things and improving them, or either for creating new stuff. Always having the science behind, but really more like really application.
I really like that definition. I don't know that I've actually heard that in that way. And that makes a ton of sense. That's a really great explanation. Looking on your LinkedIn profile, I see that you are a piano teacher. or were a piano teacher. So obviously you also have some piano in you behind you or in your past or something. So do you still play piano? And have you played piano like your whole life, or where is that at? And are you still playing?
I started playing piano, I think, when I was 11 years old in Venezuela. I really liked it. So my bachelor's, I had a scholarship in my bachelor's in Venezuela and the university. And that scholarship was actually because I played piano. So they actually gave me a scholarship, which entailed that I had to study chemical engineering, but also be involved in musical activities. So while I was doing my bachelor, I was still studying in parallel in the conservatory. So I was trying to push. I really liked it, the piano, but I never finished the conservatory because that is like 10 years. It's a lot of time. So that piano teacher I you saw, yeah, that was I think probably towards the end of my bachelor that I volunteered to just across the road in the university in Venezuela. There was like an institute. In Venezuela, there is a lot of poverty. There are a lot of poverty, or what in Brazil is called favelas. We also have something like that in Venezuela. These are very dangerous places, and there is a lot of violence. So this institution had a lot of kids and teenagers. There was this project of musical education, and I volunteered there to teach them a bit of piano or a bit of music reading, so that hopefully, you know, if these kids, they see something different beyond the violence environment that they are immersed in, then they can be motivated to do better on their life and not to be absorbed of following the path of being a criminal or something like that. It doesn't happen with all people that live in favela, it doesn't. But there is a high probability, just because you are surrounded with so much violence, that if you don't see something different, you can also follow that path, just because a high percentage of people around are doing it. And so that's what I did. Right now in Europe, no, unfortunately, I'm not playing piano now. I should really retake it, because I think it's an important part of me, actually.
I hope you're enjoying this podcast and Maria's story. If you're enjoying the podcast and would like to support it, head over to your favorite podcast platform where you can rate it, or even better, write a review, which will help other people find my podcast and bring these women's stories to more listeners. You can also find me, Kathy Nelson, at www.ordinarily-extraordinary.com. Thanks, and back to Maria's story.
What about engineers and borders? Or sorry, engineers without borders. that's a whole different thing. what's your involvement with that? Because that's another organization that I think is really interesting, and that I've thought about when I retire at some point. You know, maybe I would go volunteer with them. But like, what are you doing with them? And what's your involvement been?
For me, working now in this field, like, is very technological. Machine learning, AI, all this, all the buzzwords you want to put it on it. It's very hard sometimes to, you are always looking at these very advanced technological applications. But I think, you then forget sometimes about what are the real problems happening in the world, or what are the maybe other problems that communities in undeveloped countries are having that maybe don't require about AI, but are really important. So that is why for me, volunteering for this is important, because yes, I'm working on high tech, but I also am very conscious that there are more important things in the world that I think engineers should be paying attention to. At least that is my opinion. So this is what I'm trying to balance out with that. And basically, Engineers Without Borders is a global, I would say, movement, but every country, or almost every country, has like their own chapter. And so here in the Netherlands, we have Engineers Without Borders Netherlands. And we basically do engineering projects for communities in undeveloped countries, and we need engineering assistance, and we have different portfolios, so really energy portfolio for example, is about electrification of rural areas, maybe using solar energy, for example. We also have water portfolios, really water projects. Now there is education as well. We have some projects in education in Uganda. And now then the newest portfolio is circular economy. There are a lot of projects that are about, for example, there was this small manufacturer in Madagascar who they are manufacturing the active component for malaria medicine, and they have a chemical plant, actually a really cool plant, but they needed some help improving the plant, improving the process. So that's when, for example, something like Engineers Without Borders can help, and we step in and did some small improvements, or more like a free consultancy, like they consult us and then we give advice. But my real role there now is on partnership. So it's really like all these projects, they need some kind of money to be accomplished. So my task is really just to, just to try to raise funds, but to make these projects possible. And yeah, and that's what I do. And right now with COVID, everything remote, I must say the partnerships team is amazing. Like if they listen to this, like really great people doing there. We are all working there very hard. And right now we have some exciting partners that I hope to will get on board, because that will give us more visibility.
So, okay. So let me ask you about that, because literally the interview that I did last weekend, which actually is with a guy, but he started a organization to get girls to teach girls in an inner city how to code, to basically to like try and lift them out of poverty. So he's trying to raise funds. I started a nonprofit about a year and a half ago to help with an organization that my daughter was involved in South Africa. Fundraising is really hard. Like, how are you finding it? Like, I think it's just it's a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And I must be very honest with yourself. So we have a whole partnerships team, and I think I have been one of the less successful at raising funds with them so far. But there are others that have done a great job. And what I would see is that right now, what has been working for us is applying to grants. I think applying to grants has been proven to be, maybe it takes a bit more of effort to do the application, but it's easier to get like a good grant than to get it from companies. Companies as well, they do donate, but we don't have that many companies to make recurring donations. Most donations that we have for now from companies is really one-off. But right now we're also exploring something very interesting, that is that very big companies, okay, maybe they're not gonna give us money directly, but they have some kind of system on which the employees of those companies, and I'm talking companies like Google, Microsoft, for example, so these kind of companies, they have a system where their employees can just choose to donate to a nonprofit. So we are now in process of getting into this kind of systems of these big companies, because then we can get hopefully donations from their employees. And I think also what helped us is that, yeah, in Engineers Without Borders, we are really, not everyone is an engineer, but most of us are, and we come from different companies. So even within us, we have our own network just from the people that are there. So it's sometimes easier to just reach out to a company where you have somebody who is a volunteer.
Yeah, and you bring up a point about the recurring donations. And really, until I started this nonprofit to help with this organization in South Africa, I didn't realize how important that is, because it's so hard to plan anything if you don't know how much money you're going to have coming in, which completely makes sense. I just never really thought that much about it when I was just making my donations, when I would donate to things that were, you know, that would come up. But those recurring donations are really important for planning, you know, like, and you have ongoing expenses to deal with. So do you do mostly, I mean, have you traveled anywhere to work on Engineers Without Borders?
No. So how it works is that there is a local request from a community, and let's say we have project phases. So basically at the beginning, it's really mostly done from the Netherlands. but there are some projects on which the project team actually travels for implementation. But there are other projects where it's not necessarily for example, this one, the one I talk about is the producer of the artemisinin, which is the medicine for malaria. That one, it was like a small company. So in theory, yeah, in theory, we shouldn't be helping them because they are a company, but we made an exception on this case because they are a company from Madagascar who was really, you know, struggling. And we found out that they give a lot of jobs to the local people, so that if we help them, it will be good and actually it had a good impact. So we make there an exception. And for example, in that case, it was all done remotely by email communication. Also, this was during COVID, so there was really no traveling possible.
Yeah.
But now we have, there is a program called Young Expert Program that is gonna enable us to actually send some engineers there. So that is what is being planned on this project. So yeah, but I haven't traveled because I am really on partnership. So for me, it's really just about keeping an eye on the projects that are running and what funding they need so that I can optimize the funding search.
What are you most proud of in your life so far?
Right now, I'm really focused into this digitalization of the chemical industry. I think this is really, really the direction I want to go in. I really would like to become a leader in this area at some point. From that angle, I think I really like my... It was not something like spectacular or great, but because I like digitalization so much, I really like my internship project, which was basically doing simulations for a process. And for me, I'm proud of it because it taught me a lot. And it basically was the opening door of to go into this world of digitalization. So right now I'm very proud of that because I think it was quite interesting building the simulation.
And you may have just answered this, but where do you see your career going? Like, what are your goals?
Yeah, so right now, like, really is this, I really want to enable practical, technical, also taking into account the human factor, digitalization in the chemical industry specifically. So I see myself, I hope, at some point to be leading some department or something based on this, because I feel that this is a balance that has to be achieved. So digital technologies are going to continue to advance, and we have to find the middle point on which the chemical industry is not too behind. You have to find really this middle point between being on a place where you are benefiting from the advances, but also you are not on the stream on where you are applying all this technology just for the sake of it, and then you're not getting any value out of it. So I think we should really find that optimal point where the chemical industry can benefit without being all hyped about this technology, but actually getting value and results. And this is the direction I want to head in, is to really finish learning as much as I can from this technology, get experience from manufacturing shop floor to really understand how the people in the shop floor in manufacturing, how they work and how these technologies can help them and include them in the process. Because what happens is that a lot of people develop these, but they don't have the end user in mind. They don't know how operations are performed on the chemical shop floor. And I think you really need to understand that, because otherwise, yeah, it's not going to work and you're not going to convince them to use them. And they should be involved as well. They should say what they want. They should, the operators from chemical plants should say what they want and should give their feedback. When you're implementing, for example, these algorithms on their plants, they should be able to tell you, hey, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, or we should get rid of this algorithm or not. So this is really the direction I want to head in.
I 1000% agree. So like I said, I'm a utility engineer that works in communications, and my husband works in operations for a utility, and his friends are linemen and stuff. And I feel like I've preached this all the time, how important it is to talk to the people that are going to use the equipment that you're putting in, because it's their lives that you're impacting, and it's, you know, even their safety and their actual life in some cases that you're affecting. And it's so important and it gets overlooked so many times. I can relate, but in a completely different setting. But yes, the end user needs to always be kept in mind in a project when you're doing something that affects them. So important. So overlooked sometimes. Do you have any advice for girls or young women thinking about going into STEM or chemical engineering? Are there things that you wish that you knew when you were starting out, or what advice would you give?
Yeah, it, as I said, characteristics which you don't have control over, like, or at least at moment of birth, you don't have control over, like your gender, you shouldn't let that affect you, and you should just go for it. And also pay attention to, I would say, your classes of mathematics and chemistry or physics, because it could be that you don't use the comp sets. That could be an outcome, but it also could be that you end up just like me on the other side, where you are really are going to see all these things, and then you're going to realize, oh yeah, I need to use all this.
I'm actually really glad that you talked about that, because I talk a lot about the fact, because I don't use math in my job. Like, I'm a system engineer. I use equipment that other people developed and put together systems. And so I talk a lot about the fact that I don't use math. And I think it's really great that you pointed out that there are engineers that do use math. And it's really important to pay attention, because you might. I guess it just kind of depends on what area you're going into. But I'm honestly really glad that you pointed that out, because I do talk a bit about that. And that's just my own experience, right? It's not everybody's experience. It's not everybody's job. And I usually talk about in context that I love math. Like, I always say I would have been a calculus teacher if I wasn't an engineer. I love math. And so I'm actually kind of jealous that you get to use math in your day-to-day work.
I mean, it's not like I use it, but it's, for example, right now that I'm learning about all these algorithms, like really machine learning, AI. And these are the names, but really what is behind them, or at least what I have seen is behind them, is really a lot of math. When people talk about neural networks, I don't like even calling them like that. It's really just a bunch of matrix operations. So all these algorithms are based on math. And I think what's really beautiful about this field of machine learning is that it's programming, but it's a different type of programming. It's a programming, I would say, for the people that like math, and I really like it, and I really like how to think, how the optimization works and all this. So it's not like I have to use it every day, but I need to know the concepts, because then when these algorithms don't work as I expect, I need to understand what's going on, and that is something I really enjoy.
Yeah. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to share?
Yeah, right now I'm just very focused on what I told you, and I hope, yeah, to find that middle point on which we can combine the best of both worlds, as I said, the physical models and the data models, because, yeah, one thing about data models, you have this thing called in statistics, the course of dimensionality, and that basically says, as the number of input parameters increases, you will need a lot of data. So for example, if you have a model that only takes into account, I don't know, temperature and pressure, that is two-dimensional, you don't need that much data. But if you had a model with, I don't know, 20 parameters, then you have to think on a hypothetical 20-dimensional space that, yeah, you cannot really imagine. Mm. But then you can imagine how many points you will need to fill that space. So that is a drawback from these machine learning algorithms, and I hope to be able to really combine the knowledge of physics, these equations, don't throw them away, so that we can reach an optimum, and I hope too that people can feel the same way about machine learning and AI, just how I feel, that I like to look beyond the buzzwords and the terms, and really just think that these things are just that. It's just a bunch of mathematics that we need to understand, and they can be useful. So I really hope that people can simplify it to that.
That's really great. Maria, I'm really glad that you're on the podcast today. I'm glad that I got the chance to talk with you and learn about what you do, or at least more about what you do. But it's really great to have had the time to talk with you, and I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. You can find a list of definitions, acronyms, and a fact check in the episode notes. If you like this podcast, please like it and tell your friends. And please join me for future episodes. Thank you.